Even Cubs now come with glass panels, but will they make us safer pilots? I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, certified flight instructor based in the Buffalo area, also the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which is available on the internet. We get together with Bob each Monday to talk about safety topics in general aviation. And Bob, thanks very much for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, Paul, I enjoy doing this.
You mentioned in the January edition of Over the Airwaves, you had an article called Steam versus Glass. And you talked about the time when electronic calculators came in to replace slide rules. And, you know, that's an interesting analogy because I remember at the time, and maybe I'm dating myself here, but I remember in high school when everybody was still using slide rules, and it was just a couple of years after I graduated that the Texas Instrument calculators first really hit the scene. Mm-hmm. I remember for a long time there being an argument about which one was easier to use and which one was better. And that's exactly what has happened in some cases over the past 10 years or so with steam gauges versus glass.
Well, you know, before we get into this, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
First question I'm going to ask you, Paul, is do men make better pilots than women? And the second question I'd like to ask you, more technically, is it pitch or power that controls altitude? And those two questions have perhaps excited more discussions and debates in the coffee clutches around airports than any others. And I use those as an example of the debate that now is raging around steam gauges versus glass panels. There's not an answer. There's not an answer because we do not have enough data yet to determine what the safety outcome or the relative accident rates are versus glass versus steam gauges. But there's two things that I think are intuitively obvious when it comes to glass versus steam gauges. I believe I've taken a number of primary pilot students, both in steam gauges, round gauges, and glass panels, into the clouds for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, into hard IMC. And this is strictly anecdotal evidence, but I have seen a primary pilot, a student pilot, not yet with license, or sometimes not even have soloed, I'll put them into a real cloud in a steam gauge airplane, and I'll tell you, they are lost.
Mm-hmm.
They are functionally lost in the cockpit. Then, more recently, we have now glass cockpit G1000s in our flight school. I've done the same thing. And all I say to them is, I said, look at the big screen in front of you. The sky is blue, and the ground is brown. And just look at that as if it were a hole in the front of the airplane, and you're looking out the window. And then we go into the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
First time. In virtually every case, the student pilot was able to keep the airplane upright in the clouds. Beyond that, I was able to have them make turns to a heading, climbs, and descents with tremendous ease that does not exist when they have to develop an instrument scan using the old six round gauges. So from that basis only, just that basis only, that is disorientation in the clouds and our number one killing scenario, and that is continued VFR flight into IMC conditions. If that should happen, and we're certainly hoping that it doesn't, but if that should happen and the pilot's in a glass cockpit airplane, I believe he has a much better chance of keeping that airplane upright in the sky with that great big glass panel in front of them. Number two, and here I'm going to give away a marketing secret.
Okay.
One of the greatest problems that we have right now in aviation, and it's one that I know AOPA is dealing very aggressively with, and that is our declining numbers of pilots. Now, we have a fairly competitive flight training environment here in Buffalo, and I've had prospective students shop for flight schools, and I've had a dozen cases, if I've had one, where a student comes up to me and says, Mr. Miller, now I've checked over here at this airport, and I've checked over here at that airport, and I've checked at the third airport, and now I'm coming to check you guys out. And Mr. Miller, I understand you are a little bit more expensive, both in terms of your aircraft rental and your instructional fees, than all of the other airports in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I come to your flight school? And I'll have sitting outside, conveniently sitting there, a G1000 equipped Cessna 172. And I'll say, friend, I'd like you to go outside, jump inside that airplane, and you'll find a red toggle switch and a white toggle switch. Now I have the key in my pocket, so they're not going to go anywhere with the airplane.
Right.
As a prospective student. But I'll say to them, I want you to turn on first the red toggle switch, and then I want you to turn on the white toggle switch. Sit there for a couple of minutes, turn the switches off, come back in, and we'll talk. In, I think, 4 out of 5 of those cases, on average, at least 80% of those cases, the student says to me, when can we sign up?
Yes.
When can we sign up? They get in there, and they look at that big glass panel, those two big glass panels, and they all they can recollect in the, my competing flight schools in the area, very, very intimidating-looking round gauges, something from that they can never manage to handle.
Mm-hmm.
But they look at these two big screens as if they were big video games, and they say, when can I sign up? So I think the glass cockpit in terms of getting new students interested, getting older adults interested in learning how to fly when they see the simplicity of these screens is going to do just wonders in terms of our new pilot starts. I think it's going to enhance the number of people not only signing up for training, certainly the number of people completing training, and that's another one of our sad statistics that some 60% of our student starts never finish.
Mm-hmm.
So we add pilot numbers to the added safety because of the positional awareness the big screens give us. I think we're in a win-win situation with glass.
Well, I think you mentioned two key words that jumped out at me, Bob. One was intimidating, and the other one was video game. I think for anyone who's used to working with a computer, which nowadays is going to be almost every flight student that comes in your door, you know, I think they can relate to that. And a lot of people have even played with Microsoft Flight Simulator. And so they have that kind of basic understanding. And to look at, even if you're an experienced pilot or maybe you learned to fly years ago and have had 20 years off and are coming back, even in the best of circumstances with an experienced instrument-rated pilot, the information you need to fly is scattered all over the place on a traditional steam gauge panel, and it's all kind of integrated on a glass panel.
Yeah, it just intuitively makes much more sense. I remember moving from DOS, as many of our listeners have, moving from DOS operating systems in the 80s, early 80s, over to Windows. And I was one of the many reluctant folks who said, no, I'm okay with the old DOS. I don't want to venture into this new operating system called Windows, until I went to the computer store and saw all of the wonderful new programs
right.
that were written in Windows and not available in DOS. Once these students realize that if they're going to shop, ever shop for a newer airplane or hope to fly professionally with a corporation or an airline in the coming years, they're all glass. And so it's easy for us to say, why become proficient on a technology that is going the way that DOS operating systems are going? Sure, the old system's going to be around in older airplanes. But the new system, I'll tell you, we have students that we have in their glass, and we'll shift them over to a round-gauge airplane just for a diversion. And they said, not for me. Just no way. Once you've experienced the simplicity of this, they stay.
Well, it often weighs less than steam gauges. It doesn't cost a lot more than steam gauges. I mean, there's a whole bunch of advantages. I guess then, in terms of jumping into one airplane or the other, you can't necessarily make a case for glass panels making us safer. However, under some very common circumstances that we could find ourselves in as pilots, it would actually be safer.
Well, again, positional awareness.
Right. Right.
You take for example the tragic JFK disaster accident back in when was that then 1990 something where he was found himself disoriented in the clouds, and that can easily happen on steam gauges. I mean, but you look at that great big screen on the PFD, the primary flight display, man, it is all there. You have got to be totally out to lunch to lose yourself on that screen in terms of just flight attitude. The redundancy, you have a single attitude indicator that toasts in the clouds. You got to be pretty proficient to fly partial panel.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose that primary to flight display on the screen in front of us, it automatically reverts over to the right side and replaces the multifunction display back with the data that you once had in the primary. So from a safety redundancy standpoint, partial panel is something that's even very difficult to train, because we can't make these glass panel aircraft partial panel. I mean, there's just there's just very difficult to shut down those kinds of systems because they're all fully integrated into one.
All right. Well, listen, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want you to tell us about some friends of yours who have started a new feature in Over the Airwaves. It sounds like they're living the dream, and I think that this is going to make very interesting reading for a lot of our listeners. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves and of Bob Miller Flight Training in the Buffalo, New York area. We're talking about some of the content in this month's Over the Airwaves. And Bob, you started a new feature in this edition in which we're going to be treated to some stories shared by a couple who live in your area who really are using general aviation in a very fun way, and I think a way that you feel would keep us all more proficient if we did it as well.
Yes, my good friends, John and Connie Bauck, B-O-U-C-K, live in Auburn, New York. And John, a number of years ago, hitched a ride with me to Orlando in my Cessna 210. And he had been a pilot for a lot of years and allowed, like so many of us, his skills to kind of lapse. But somehow that flight reinvigorated his interest in aviation. And shortly thereafter, he went on and upgraded his skills to the point that he'd actually qualified and is qualified as a certificated flight instructor. Beyond that, he went out and bought a Cessna 210. And just for giggles, because he lives on the water, he bought a Cessna 180 on floats. So here is an individual who is in early retirement years, in mid-60s, or early 60s. His wife is a school teacher who just retired this past year, has been very successful in commercial real estate, and said, why not? Life's too short. And decided with his wife that they would fly every weekend that they could. And between the float plane and the 210, they have been doing this every weekend. And John had contacted me and sent me a story or an example or a history, if you will, of several flights that he had taken, and thought that this might be something that our OTA readers would like to read about. And I read the article, and the first thing that came to my mind as when I read it, and I certainly wanted to publish it each month, is if we have a reluctant spouse, and many of us do, mm-hmm. a reluctant spouse in terms of flying,
right?
If we can leave our computer screen turned on to John's article each month, each time we come out, and just ask our reluctant spouse to read that, we may find a more energetic, more cooperative spouse who wants to fly, simply because John's articles takes the focus off of the flying and puts it more on the destinations that are made possible via flying. He talks this month, for example, about a weekend trip that he and his wife took up to Mont Tremblant, Canada, which is located up north of Ottawa and Quebec in Ontario, in Quebec province in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to drive there, it's a nightmare to get there. I mean, it's a long way through very, very remote rural areas, but by airplane, it's an hour and a half away.
Right.
And they land there, and I took this trip a year ago with my family. This is just one example of, as you know, just hundreds and hundreds of places. But he writes it so artfully in two or three pages and tells how to do it, tells the border crossing requirements and things like that. But more importantly, he has as his tagline in front of each of these articles, it says, it's up to you to fly away. Mm-hmm. And use that airplane, get out. He says, take a map, for example, and draw a circle that is 2 hours by plane all the way around your home airport. And 2 hours by plane represents about 250 miles, maybe 300 miles, depending on your plane.
Right.
And then look at all of the little towns, villages, maybe cities within that 200 or 300 mile radius that you probably have never been to. And then get in your airplane and go fly. Now, lots of people, he says, will make a series of short hops, mm-hmm. but they're reluctant to make a longer hop. And he says, just make the longer hop and see what you will discover. So it's a fascinating series of articles, and we did run one in the December issue. We've got another one running here in January, and we hope to continue this each month. And John's feedback from the articles have been very good. He's getting reader mail because we include his email, people who have been to those places, and mm-hmm. Questions about cross-country flight. So he's just taken the utility of the aircraft and is living a dream life with airplanes, and I think it's something that we all can benefit from.
Well, now, Bob, you're involved not only in the instructional environment, but you're also a Cessna Pilot Center, which means that, you know, obviously the sale of aircraft is important to what you do. How big a factor is a reluctant spouse in holding down the numbers in GA?
Profound. Single word, profound. And I don't think it's so much the reluctant spouse has a lot to do with it, but I think the scared spouse has even more to do with holding the numbers down in GA. The scared spouse is the one who feels that every little airplane is just a moment away from falling out of the sky. Mm-hmm. And that's why they keep hubby from buying an airplane. That's why they keep hubby, or I shouldn't say hubby, sometimes it's the other way around. You know, it could
right.
be a reluctant husband, but or a scared husband. But if we can eliminate reduce our dreadful accident rate, on the one hand, that would reduce the scared spouse syndrome, and then the reluctant spouse syndrome would be reduced by just simply by looking what others can do with their airplanes. Last month, I took my wife. She wanted to see. There was a particular Broadway show she wanted to see. We just took off a Wednesday. We headed an hour down to New York City in the 210. It's 400 miles driving, almost 500 miles driving distance. Headed down to New York City, parked the airplane, went into town, saw the show, had dinner, and we're home by 9 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And she had some shopping on Fifth Avenue done along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, I'll tell you, my wife would be the last person who would get in the airplane with me on a Saturday morning to fly for a $100 hamburger to, a village, 20 miles away.
Right.
If the destination's worthwhile, she's first to go.
That's an interesting observation. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate these Monday conversations. We'll refer our readers to Over the Airwaves, and we'll catch you again next Monday.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. We'll see you next time.
You can find out more about Bob Miller and Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.